Guardian Unlimited. Wolf Brother by Michelle Paver is read by Ian McKellen and brought to you by audible.co.uk. Listen out for next week's instalment.
Chapter 4. Torak had to make a fire. It was a race between him and the fever. The prize was his life. He fumbled at his belt for his tinder pouch. His hands shook as he took out some wisps of shredded birch bark, and he kept dropping his flint and missing his strike fire. He was snarling with frustration when he finally got a spark to take. By the time he had a fire going, he was shivering uncontrollably and hardly felt the heat of the flames. Noises boomed unnaturally loud. The gurgle of the river, the hoo-hoo of an owl, the famished yipping of that infuriating cub. Why couldn't it leave him alone? He staggered to the river for water. Just in time he remembered what Farr said about not leaning over too far. When you're ill, never catch sight of your named soul in the water. Seeing it makes you dizzy. You might fall in and drown. With his eyes shut, he drank his fill, then stumbled back to the shelter. He longed for rest, but he knew that he had to see to his arm, or he wouldn't stand a chance. He took some dried willow bark from his medicine pouch and chewed it, gagging on its gritty bitterness. He smeared the paste on his forearm, then bound up the wound again with his birch-bast bandage. The pain was so bad that he nearly passed out. It was all he could do to kick off his boots and crawl into his sleeping sack. The cub tried to clamber in too. He pushed it away. Dully, teeth chattering, he watched the cub pad over to the fire and study it curiously. It extended one large grey paw and patted the flames, then leapt back with an outraged yelp. "That'll teach you," muttered Torak. The cub shook itself and bounded off into the gloom. Torak curled into a ball, cradling his throbbing arm and thinking bitterly what a mess he'd made of things. All his life he'd lived in the forest with Farr, pitching camp for a night or two, then moving on. He knew the rules. Never skimp on your shelter. Never use more effort than you need when gathering food. Never leave it too late to pitch camp. His first day on his own, and he'd broken everyone. It was frightening, like forgetting how to walk. With his good hand, he touched his clan tattoos, tracing the pair of fine dotted lines that followed each cheekbone. Farr had given them to him when he was 7, rubbing bearberry juice into the pierced skin. "You don't deserve them," Torak told himself. "If you die, it'll be your own fault." Again the grief twisted in his chest. Never in his life had he slept alone. Never without Farr. For the first time there was no good-night touch of the rough, gentle hand, no familiar smell of buckskin and sweat. Torak's eyes began to sting. He screwed them shut and slid down into evil dreams. He is wading knee-deep in moss, struggling to escape the bear. His father's screams ring in his ears. The bear is coming for him. He tries to run, but he only sinks deeper into the moss. It sucks him down. His father is screaming. The bear's eyes burn with the lethal fire of the other world. The demon fire. It rears on its hind legs, a towering menace unimaginably huge. Its great jaws gape as it roars its hatred to the moon. Torak woke with a cry. The last of the bear's roars were echoing through the forest. They weren't a dream. They were real. Torak held his breath. He saw the blue moonlight through the gaps in his shelter. He saw that the fire was nearly out. He felt his heart pounding. Again the forest shook. The trees tensed to listen. But this time Torak realized that the roars were far away, many day walks to the west. Slowly he breathed out. At the mouth of the shelter the cub sat watching him. Its slanted eyes were a strange dark gold. Amber, thought Torak, remembering the little seal amulet that Farr had worn on a thong around his neck. He found that oddly reassuring. At least he wasn't alone. As his heartbeats returned to normal, the pain of his fever came surging back. It crisped his skin. His skull felt ready to burst. He struggled to get more willow bark from his medicine pouch, but dropped it and couldn't find it again in the half-darkness. He dragged another branch onto the fire, then lay back, gasping. He couldn't get those roars out of his head. Where was the bear now? The glade of dead horses had been north of the stream where it had attacked far, but now the bear seemed to be in the west. Would it keep heading west? Or had it caught Torek's scent and turned back? How long before it got here and found him lying helpless and sick? The calm, steady voice seemed to whisper in his mind, almost as if far were with him. If the bear does come, the cub will warn you. Remember, Torak, a wolf's nose is so keen that he can smell the breath of a fish. His ears are so sharp that he can hear the clouds pass. Yes, thought Torak, the cub will warn me. That's something. I want to die with my eyes open, facing the bear like a man, like far. Somewhere very far off, a dog barked. Not a wolf, but a dog. Torak frowned. Dogs meant people, and there were no people in this part of the forest. Were there? He sank into darkness, back into the clutches of the bear. Chapter 5. It was nearly dark when Torak woke up. He'd slept all day. He felt weak and ragingly thirsty, but his wound was cooler and much less sore. The fever was gone. So was the cub. Torak was surprised to find himself wondering if it was all right. Why should he care? The cub was nothing to him. He stumbled to the river and drank, then woke the slumbering fire with more wood. The effort left him trembling. He rested and ate the last pignut and some sorrel leaves he'd found by the river bank. They were tough and very sour, but strengthening. Still, the cub didn't come. He thought about trying to summon it with a howl. But if it came, it would only ask for food. Besides, howling might attract the bear. So instead, he pulled on his boots and went to check the traps. The fish hooks were empty, except for one, which held the bones of a small fish, neatly nibbled clean. He was luckier with the snares. One held a woodgrass, struggling feebly. Meat. Muttering a quick thank you to the bird's spirit, Torak snapped its neck, slit its belly, and gulped the warm liver down raw. It tasted bitter and slimy, but he was too famished to care. Feeling slightly steadier, he tied the bird to his belt and went to check the deadfall. To his relief, it contained no dead cub. The cub was sitting by its mother, prodding her stinking carcass with one paw. At Torak's approach, it started towards him, then looked back at the she-wolf, yipping indignantly. It wanted Torak to sort things out. Torak sighed. How could he explain about death when he didn't understand it himself? Come on, he said, not bothering to speak wolf. The cub's large ears swiveled to catch the sound. There's nothing here, Torak said impatiently. Let's go. Back at the shelter, he plucked and spitted the woodgrass and set it to roast over the fire. The cub lunged for it. Torak grabbed the cub's muzzle and slammed it to the ground. No, he growled. It's mine. The cub lay obediently still, thumping its tail. When Torak released its muzzle, it rolled onto its back, baring its pale, fluffy belly, and gave him a silent grin of apology. Then it scampered off to a safe distance, head politely lowered. Torak nodded, satisfied. The cub had to learn that he was the lead wolf, or there'd be endless trouble in the future. What future? He thought with a scowl. His future didn't include the cub. The smell of roast meat drove all other thoughts away. Fat sizzled on the fire, his mouth watered. Quickly, he twisted one leg off the woodgrass and tucked it into the fork of a birch tree as an offering for his clan guardian. Then he settled down to eat. It was the best thing he'd ever tasted. He sucked every shred of meat and fat off the bones and crunched up every morsel of crisp, salty skin. He forced himself to ignore the great amber eyes that watched every bite. When he'd finished, he wiped his mouth on the back of his hand. The cub followed every move. Torak blew out a long breath. Oh, all right, he muttered. He tore the remaining foot off the carcass and tossed it over. The cub crunched it up in moments. Then it looked at Torak hopefully. "I haven't got any more," he told it. The cub yipped impatiently and glanced at the carcass in his hands. He'd picked the bones clean, but they'd still make needles, fish hooks, and broth, although without a cooking skin he couldn't make any broth. Sensing that he might be storing up trouble for himself, he tossed half the carcass to the cub. The cub demolished it in its powerful jaws, then curled up and went instantly to sleep, a gently heaving ball of hot grey fur. Torak wanted to sleep too, but he knew that he couldn't. As night fell and the cold came on, he sat staring into the fire. Now that he'd shaken off the fever and eaten some meat, he could think clearly at last. He thought of the glade of dead horses, and the bear's demon-haunted eyes. "It is possessed," Farr had said. "Some demon has entered it and made it evil." But what actually is a demon? Torak wondered. He didn't know. He only knew that demons hate all living things and sometimes escape from the other world, rising out of the ground to cause sickness and havoc. As he thought about this, he realized that although he knew quite a lot about hunters and prey, about lynxes and wolverines, aurochs and horses and deer, he knew very little about the other creatures of the forest. He only knew that clan guardians watch over campsites, and that ghosts moan in leafless trees on stormy nights, forever seeking the clans they have lost. He knew that the hidden people live inside rocks and rivers, just as the clans live in shelters, and that they seem beautiful, until they turn their backs, which are hollow as rotten trees. As for the world spirit, who sends the rain and snow and prey, about that Torak knew least of all. Until now he'd never even thought about it. It was too remote, an unimaginably powerful spirit who lived far away on its mountain, a spirit whom no one had ever seen, but who was said to walk by summer as a man with the antlers of a deer, and by winter as a woman with bare red willow branches for hair. Torak bowed his head to his knees. The weight of his oath to Far pressed down on him like a rock. Suddenly, the cub sprang up with a tense grunt. Torak leapt to his feet. The cub's eyes were fixed on the darkness, ears rigid, hackles raised. Then it hurtled out of the firelight and disappeared. Torak stood very still with his hand on Far's knife. He felt the trees watching him. He heard them whispering to each other. Somewhere not far off, a robin began to sing its plaintive night song. The cub reappeared, hackles down, muscles soft, and smiling slightly. Torak relaxed his grip on the knife. Whatever was out there had either gone or wasn't a threat. If the bear had been close, that robin wouldn't be singing. He knew that much. He sat down again. "You've got to find the mountain of the world spirit within the next moon," he told himself. "That's what Far said. When the red eye is highest, that's when demons are strongest. You know this." "Yes, I do know it," thought Torak. "I know about the red eye. I've seen it. Every autumn, the great bull Aurok, the most powerful demon in the other world, escapes into the night sky. At first he has his head down, pawing the earth, so that only the starry gleam of his shoulder can be seen. But as winter comes on, he rises and grows stronger. That's when you see his glittering horns and his bloodshot red eye, the red star of winter. And in the moon of red willow he rides highest, and evil is strongest. That's when the demons walk. That's when the bear will be invincible." Glancing up through the branches, Torak saw the cold glint of stars. On the eastern horizon, just above the distant blackness of the high mountains, he found it. The starry shoulder of the great Aurok. It was now the end of the moon of roaring stacks. In the next moon, the blackthorn moon, the red eye would appear, and the power of the bear would grow stronger. By the moon of Red Willow, it would be invincible. Head north, Farr had said. Many day walks. Torak didn't want to go further north. That would take him out of the small patch of the forest that he knew and into the unknown. And yet, Farr must have believed that he stood a chance, or he wouldn't have made him swear. He reached for a stick and poked the embers. He knew that the high mountains were far in the east, beyond the deep forest, and that they curved from north to south, arching out of the forest like the spine of an enormous whale. And he knew that the world spirit was said to live in the northernmost mountain, but no one had ever got close to it, for the spirit always beat them back with howling blizzards and treacherous rock falls. All day Torak had been fleeing north, but he was still only level with the southernmost roots of the high mountains. He had no idea how he was going to get so far on his own. He was still weak from the fever and in no state to start a journey. "So don't," he thought. "Don't make the same mistake twice. Don't panic and nearly kill yourself out of sheer stupidity. Stay here for another day or so. Get stronger. Then start." Making a decision made him feel a little better. He put more sticks on the fire and saw, to his surprise, that the cub was watching him. Its eyes were steady and quite un-cub-like. The eyes of a wolf. Once again, Farr's voice echoed in his memory. "The eyes of a wolf aren't like those of any other creature, except those of a man. Wolves are our closest brothers, Torak, and it shows in their eyes. The only difference is the colour. Theirs are golden, while ours are grey. But the wolf doesn't see that, because his world doesn't have colours. Only silvers and greys." Torak had asked how he knew that, but Farr had smiled and shaken his head, saying he'd explain when Torak was older. There were lots of things he'd been going to explain when Torak was older. Torak scowled and rubbed his face. The cub was still watching him. Already it had something of the beauty of a full-grown wolf, the slender pale grey muzzle, large silver ears with their edging of black, elegant, dark-rimmed eyes. Those eyes, as clear as sunlight in spring water. Suddenly Torak had the strangest sense that the cub knew what he was thinking. "More than any other hunters in the forest," Farr whispered in his mind, "wolves are like us. They hunt in packs. They enjoy talking and playing. They have a fierce love for their mates and cubs, and each wolf works hard for the good of the pack." Torak sat upright. Was that what Farr was trying to tell him? "Your guide will find you." Could it be that the cub was his guide? He decided to put it to the test. Clearing his throat, he got down on his hands and knees. He didn't know how to say mountain in wolf talk, so he guessed. Gesturing with his head and asking, in the low, intense yip and yowl which forms part of wolf talk, if the cub knew the way. The cub swiveled its ears and looked at him, then glanced politely away, because in wolf talk to stare too hard is a threat. Then it stood up, stretched, and lazily swung its tail. Nothing in its movements told Torak that it had understood his question. It was simply a cub again. Or was it? Could he really have imagined that look? Chapter 6. It was many lights and darks since Tall Tailless had come. At first he'd slept all the time, but now he was being more of a normal wolf. When he felt sad, he went quiet. When he was angry, he snarled. He liked playing tag with a bit of hareskin, and when the cub pounced on him, he rolled on the ground, making odd yip and yowls, which the cub guessed was his way of laughing. Sometimes Tall Tailless would join the cub in a howl, and they'd sing their feelings to the forest. Tall Tailless's howl was rough and not very tuneful, but full of feeling. The rest of his talk was the same, rough, but expressive. Of course, he didn't have a tail, and couldn't move his ears, or fluff up his fur, or hit the high yips, but he usually made himself understood. So, in many ways, he was just like any other wolf, although not in everything. Poor Tall Tailors could hardly smell or hear at all, and during the dark he liked to stare at the bright beast that bites hot. Sometimes he took his hind paws right off, and one terrible time, even his pelt. Strangest of all, he slept for ages. He didn't seem to know that a wolf should only ever sleep in snatches and must get up often, stretching and turning, so that he's ready for anything. The cub tried to teach Tall Tailors to wake up more often by nudging him and biting his ears. Instead of being grateful, Tall Tailors just got very, very cross. In the end, the cub let him sleep. And next light, Tall Tailors got up after a stupidly long sleep in an extremely bad mood. Well, what did he expect if he wouldn't let his pack brother wake him up? Today, though, Tall Tailors had woken up before the light and in a very different mood. The cub sensed his nervousness. Curious, the cub watched Tall Tailors set off along the pack trail that went up wet. A hunt? The cub bounded after him, then yipped at him to stop. This wasn't a hunt, and Tall Tailors was going the wrong way. It wasn't just that he was following the fast wet, which the cub now hated and feared more than anything. This was the wrong way, because it wasn't the right way. The right way was over the hill, then on for many lights and darks. The cub didn't know how he knew this, but he felt it inside, a faint, deep pull, like the pull of the den when he'd strayed too far, only fainter because it was coming from so far away. Up ahead, Tall Tailors strode along unaware. The cub gave a low warning, "Oof," like his mother used to when she wanted them back in the den. "Now!" Tall Tailors turned round. He asked something in his own talk. It sounded like, "What is it?" "Oh," snapped the cub. He trotted to the foot of the hill and stared at the right trail. Then he glanced at Tall Tailors, then back to the trail. "Not that way. This way." Impatiently, Tall Tailors repeated his question. The cub waited for him to catch on. Tall Tailors scratched his head. He said something else in tailless talk. Then he started back towards the cub. Torak watched Wolf's body tense. Wolf's ears flicked forwards. His black nose twitched. Torak followed his gaze. He couldn't see anything through the tangle of hazel and willow herb, but he knew that the buck was in there because Wolf knew it, and Torak had learned to trust Wolf. Wolf glanced up at Torak, his amber eyes grazing the boy's. Then his gaze returned to the forest. Silently, Torak broke off a head of grass and split it with his thumbnail, letting the fine seeds float away on the breeze. Good. They were still downwind of the buck. It wouldn't catch their scent. And before setting out, Torak had, as always, masked his smell by smearing his skin with wood ash. Without a sound, he drew an arrow from his quiver and fitted it to his bow. It was only a small roebuck, but if he could bring it down, it would be the first big kill he'd ever made on his own. He needed it. Prey was much scarcer than it should be at this time of year. The cub's head sank low. Torak crouched. Together they crept forward. They'd been tracking the buck all day. All day Torak had followed its trail of bitten-off twigs and cloven prints, trying to feel what it was feeling, guessing where it would go next. To track prey, you must first learn to know it as you would a brother, what it eats and when and how, where it rests, how it moves. Far had taught Torak well. He knew how to track. He knew that you must stop often to listen, to open your senses to what the forest is telling you. Right now he knew that the roebuck was tiring. Earlier in the day the cleaves of each small hoofprint had been deep and splayed, which meant it had been galloping. Now the cleaves were lighter and closer together. It had slowed to a walk. It must be hungry because it hadn't had time to graze, and thirsty because it had kept to the safety of the deep thickets where there was no water. Torak glanced about for signs of a stream, West through the hazel, about 30 paces off the trail, he glimpsed a clump of alders. Alders only grow near water. That was where the buck must be heading. Softly he and the cub moved through the undergrowth. Cupping his hand to his ear, he caught a faint ripple of water. Suddenly Wolf froze, ears rammed forwards, one forepaw raised. Yes, there, through the alders, the buck stooping to drink. Carefully Torak took aim. The buck raised its head, water dripping from its muzzle. Torak watched it snuff the air and fluff out its pale rump fur in alarm. Another heartbeat and it would be gone. He loosed his arrow. It thudded into the buck's ribs just behind the shoulder. With a graceful shudder, the buck folded its knees and sank to the ground. Torak gave a shout and pushed through the undergrowth towards it. Wolf raced him and easily won, but then pulled back to let Torak catch up. The cub was learning to respect the lead wolf. Panting, Torak stood over the buck. Its ribs were still heaving, but death was near. Its three souls were getting ready to leave. Torak swallowed. Now he had to do what he'd seen Far do countless times, but for him it would be the first time, and he had to get it right. Kneeling beside the buck, he put out his hand and gently stroked its rough, sweaty cheek. The buck lay quiet under his palm. "You did well," Torak told it. His voice sounded awkward. "You were brave and clever, and you kept going all day. I promised to keep the pact with the world spirit and treat you with respect. Now, go in peace." He watched death glaze the great dark eye. He felt grateful to the buck, but also proud. This was his first big kill. Wherever Far was on the death journey, he would be pleased. Torak turned to Wolf and put his head on one side, wrinkling his nose and baring his teeth in a wolf's smile. "Well done. Thank you." Wolf pounced on Torak, nearly knocking him over. Torak laughed and gave him a handful of blackberries from his food pouch. Wolf snuffled them up. It had been 7 days since they'd set out from the fast water, and still there was no sign of the bear, no tracks, no fur snagged on brambles, no more forest-shaking roars. Something was wrong, though. At this time of year the forest should be echoing with the bellows of rutting red deer and the clash of their antlers as they fought for females, but all was silence. It was as if the forest was slowly emptying, the prey fleeing from the unseen menace. In 7 days the only creatures Torak had encountered were birds and voles, and once, with heart-stopping suddenness, a hunting party. 3 men, 2 women, and a dog. Luckily he'd managed to slip away before they saw him. "Stay away from men," Far had warned. "If they find out what you can do..." Torak didn't know what that meant, but he knew Far was right. He'd grown up away from people. He wanted nothing to do with them. Besides, he had Wolf now. With every day that passed, they understood each other better. Torak was coming to know that wolf talk is a complex blend of gestures, looks, smells, and sounds. The gestures can be with the muzzle, ears, paws, tail, shoulders, fur, or the whole body. Many are very subtle, the merest tilt or twitch. Most do not involve sound. By now Torak knew quite a lot of them, although it wasn't as if he'd had to learn them. It felt more as though he was remembering them. Still, there was one thing he knew he'd never be able to master, because he wasn't a wolf. This was what he'd taken to calling wolf sense, the cub's uncanny knack of sensing his thoughts and moods. Wolf had his own moods too. Sometimes he was the cub, with a puppyish love of berries and an inability to keep still, like the time he'd wriggled incessantly when Torak had held a naming rite for him, then licked off all the red alder juice daubed on his paws. Unlike Torak, who'd been nervous about performing so important a rite, Wolf had seemed unimpressed, merely impatient for it to be over. At other times, though, he was the guide, mysteriously sure of the way they must take. But if Torak tried to ask him about that, he never gave much of an answer. "I just know." That was all. Right now, Wolf wasn't being the guide, he was being the cub. His muzzle was purple with blackberry juice, and he was yipping insistently for more. Torek laughed and batted him away. "No more, I've got work to do." Wolf shook himself and smiled, then went off to have a sleep. It took Torak 2 full days to butcher the carcass. He'd made the buck a promise, and he had to keep it by not wasting a thing. That was the age-old pact between the hunters and the world spirit. Hunters must treat prey with respect, and in return the spirit would send more prey. It was a daunting task. It takes many summers of practice to use prey well. Torak didn't make a very good job of it, but he did his best. First, he slit the deer's belly and cut a slip of the liver for the clan guardian. The rest of the liver he cut into strips and set to dry. Then he relented and cut off a bit for Wolf, who slurped it up. Next, Torak skinned the carcass, scraping the hide clean of flesh with his antler scraper. He washed the hide in water mixed with crumbled oak bark to loosen the hairs, then stretched it between 2 saplings, well out of Wolf's leaping range. Then he scraped off the hairs, inexpertly, making several holes, and softened the hide by rubbing it with mashed deer brain. After a final round of soaking and drying, he had a reasonable skin of rawhide for rope and fishing lines. While the hide was drying, he cut the meat into thin strips and hung them over a smoky birchwood fire. When they were dry, he pounded them between 2 stones to make them thinner, then rolled them into small, tight bundles. The meat was delicious. One little piece would last him 30 days. The innards he washed, soaked in oak bark water, and draped over a juniper bush to dry. The stomach would make a water skin, the bladder a spare tinder pouch. The guts would store nuts. The lungs were Wolf's share, although not yet. Torak would chew them at day meals and night meals, then spit them out for the cub. But as he had no cooking skin for making glue, he let Wolf have the hooves straight away. The cub played with them tirelessly before crunching them to bits. Next, Torak washed the long back sinews he'd saved from the butchering, pounded them flat, then teased out the narrow fibres for thread, drying them and rubbing them in fat to make them supple. They weren't nearly as smooth or even as the thread his father used to make, but they'd do, and they were so tough that they'd outlast any clothes he sewed with them. Finally, he scraped the antlers and the long bones clean and tied them into a bundle for splintering later into fish hooks, needles and arrowheads. It was late on the 2nd day by the time he'd finished. He sat by the fire, pleasantly full of meat, whittling a whistle from a piece of grouse bone. He needed some way of summoning the cub when it was off on one of its solitary journeys, some way quieter than a howl. That hunting party might still be about. He couldn't risk any more howling. He finished whittling and gave the whistle a try. To his dismay, it made no sound. Far had carved countless whistles just like this one, and they'd always made a clear, bird-like chirp. Why didn't his? Frustrated, Torak tried again, blowing as hard as he could. Still, no sound. But to his surprise, Wolf leapt up as if he'd been stung by a hornet. Torak glanced from the startled cub to the whistle. Once more, he blew on it. Again, no sound. This time, Wolf gave a brief snarl, then a whine to show that he was a bit annoyed, but didn't want to go too far and offend Torak. Torak said sorry by gently scratching under Wolf's muzzle, and the cub slumped down. His expression made it clear. Torak shouldn't call, unless he meant something by it. Next day dawned fine and bright, and as they set off again, Torak's spirits rose. It was 12 days since the bear had killed Far. In that time, Torak had fought hunger and conquered fever, found Wolf, and made his first big kill. He'd also made plenty of mistakes, but he was still alive. He pictured his father on the journey to the land of the dead, the land where arrows are plentiful and the hunt never fails. At least, thought Torak, he has his weapons with him, and my knife for company, and all that dried meat. That blunted the edge of his grief a little. Torak knew that the loss of his father would never leave him, that he'd carry it in his chest all his life, like a stone. This morning the stone didn't feel quite so heavy. He'd survived so far, and his father would be proud. He felt almost happy as he pushed through the undergrowth on the sun-dappled forest path. A couple of thrushes squabbled overhead. The fat, happy cub kept close to his side, his bushy silver tail held high, fat, happy, and careless. Torak heard a twig snap behind him, just as a large hand grabbed him by the jerkin and yanked him off his feet.
The first three books in the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series by Michelle Paver are available to download at audible.co.uk for the special multi-buy price of £14.99 until the end of August. If you enjoyed Wolf Brother, you'll want to join The Clan, the official worldwide fan site for all readers of the Chronicles of Ancient Darkness series. The Clan is where thousands of fans just like you meet for games and chat, role-playing, art competitions, writing contests and quizzes. Best of all, it's free. So go to www.torak.info, that's torak.info, and join The Clan now.
Guardian Unlimited.